standing for the reading of the scriptures.
Morning, church. We'll be reading from John chapter 14 this morning, starting in verse 6. I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you know me, you will know my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Verse 23, those who love me will keep my word, and my Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. All right, be seated, church. I'm going to read that passage that Josh referred to in just a moment. We're starting a new series today, and I want to begin the series by talking for a few moments about Jesus, about apprenticing, and about yokes. Not egg yolks, but yoke, Y-O-K-E-S. So Jesus was a rabbi, and in the beginning of the Gospels, we find Jesus inviting people to come follow him. And there's a context for this. You remember the story? Jesus sees two brothers out fishing, and he says to them, come follow me. And they drop everything they're doing, and they go follow Jesus. The context for this is that in Jesus' day, there were many rabbis. And the rabbis had what was called a yoke, this set of interpretations of the scriptures, their teachings and the practices that went along with that teaching. And when a rabbi said, come follow me, what was understood was that the disciple would now give his life to this rabbi, following not just his interpretation of scriptures, but embodying that interpretation, living it out, and proclaiming their rabbi's version of the teachings of the Torah and the scriptures. John Mark Comer, I'm gonna mention this book in a little bit and invite you to read it if you like. John Mark Comer wrote a book, Live No Lies. Raise your hand if you've read that book or heard of it. Comer, I'm just discovering him. Some of my friends have been reading him for a long time. But in Live No Lies, he talks about what it means to be a disciple. And he spends a good bit of time replacing the word disciple with apprentice. And I like it. I like it because disciple is a perfectly good word. But disciple, that word disciple or the notion of discipling or being discipled, it's been around us for a while, and those of us who are pretty churchy, we know that word. Sometimes when you know a word for so long, it shifts and becomes something that it wasn't. And this is what Comer's doing. He's inviting us to remember that being a disciple is being an apprentice. It is to drop the work that you were doing and setting your gaze toward and your entire life toward this rabbi who's going to now teach you his way of living. This is in essence what we have, when we were baptized, when we invited Jesus to dwell within us and be our, as we proclaim this morning, our Lord and our rabbi, we, in a sense, were dropping everything that was a part of the old life, the good and the bad, leaving it behind because now we are something completely different. We now are, it's not that we have become perfect, that all of our character has changed. Our direction has changed. We now have pivoted toward a rabbi in whom we trust, whose teachings and practices we love and are drawn to. So when Jesus toward the end of the Gospel of John, before the cross event, you remember he's in a room with the disciples. They all gather around to one side to take a picture so Rembrandt can paint it later. And then they share this meal together. And Jesus does this thing. He gets up from the table and he wraps a towel around him and he washes the feet of each disciple. And when Jesus does this, he then, if you remember, he invites them to now go and do the same. This is Jesus giving his yoke to his disciples. I taught the teen class this morning. I was telling them, whenever you read a story about Jesus, part of the context is always that Jesus is teaching something to his disciples. It's not just the healing of a leper. It's not just the healing of an unclean woman. It's not just the turning over of the table. It is the presentation of his yoke, his interpretation of scriptures, and his invitation into a way of living. If you read the Sermon on the Mount, you'll notice that Jesus often says, "You have heard it said, but I say." You have heard your religious leaders and the teachers of the law and other rabbis interpret the scriptures in a particular way, but now I'm inviting you. This was a rabbi thing to say. You have heard it said, but now I'm inviting you into a particular yoke, a particular way of seeing the world and imagining your part within it, a particular way of reading the story about God and imagining what it looks like to live that out. Are you with me? So in Jesus' day, there were lots of rabbis and lots of teachers who interpreted the law, interpreted the Torah for disciples, for Jews, for followers of Yahweh. And Jesus makes a clear point. I have a number of people who read my sermons each week and then make them better. And one of my friends said, "You know, I think the Pharisees get a really bad rap, you know?" And they do, you know, like we kind of pick on the Pharisees because we see ourselves in them, right? Here are some things that Jesus said about the yoke of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. Jesus said in a number of the Gospels, he said, "Many of Israel's teachers care more about their outward appearance than they do about true inner obedience and righteousness." This is a yoke thing. Jesus is saying, you know, there are teachers of the law that teach, by the way, this might sound familiar to some of us, their teaching is primarily about outward behavior. He's not saying that they care about whether their shirt was tucked in or not, by the way. Shirt tucked in. Some bonus points for our older members. Any? All right. They're not so shallow that they're talking about they care about their physical appearance. They care about behavior, you know, like the way some of you were raised going to church as children. It was different for us, wasn't it, for kids now? And I think now is a good thing, church. But I remember not only certain expectations about how I behaved in the moment, in the room, but also the drive home in which we judged the other parents whose children weren't meeting the expectations. Anybody? Being obsessed with behavior that doesn't invite us into the heart of God is a yoke that Jesus isn't promoting. Jesus cared about inward righteousness. Unlike Jesus, many of Israel's teachers cared more about... Oh, I just read that one. What's the next one there, Russell? Sorry. Unlike Jesus, many of Israel's teachers piled unbearable burdens upon their people's shoulders, claiming this is the only way to become righteous, and according to Jesus, refusing to help. When I've been working with Isaac Beasley on preaching this summer, so poor Isaac, there's no telling what damage I've done. But we've talked about that one of the things about missional preaching is that when you're teaching, you must give the body something to expect from God. A teaching that is only about the burdens that you must carry and the behaviors that you must fill out and the appearance that you must present to the world, but doesn't include an expectation that God is there to carry burdens for you, is not a yoke that comes from Jesus. Jesus' yoke always invited a participation with God. What's another one? I don't remember how many I have up here, Russell. It's just you and me, man. Unlike Jesus, many of Israel's teachers seem to believe that keeping the technicalities of the Sabbath was more important than acting in love on behalf of one's neighbors in need. And Pharisees do get a rough shot of it because we can be just like that, can't we? I can. I can inhabit that sort of yoke. I think one more, maybe? Yeah. Unlike Jesus, many of Israel's teachers were driven by a desire to be admired and to sit in the seats of greatest honor. This takes on all kinds of forms with us, but Jesus' yoke was attractive to a certain kind of people because in many ways it was the opposite of the kinds of teachings and practices that they had been experiencing. How many of you, how many of us have been so delighted that that generation before us was willing to risk change so that we could experience the yoke of Jesus instead of the yoke of whatever particular denomination we were a part of? How many of us look back and think, oh, thank you, God, for inviting me into something? It's not saying something bad about what we experienced. It's just been a journey for us. So thankful that God has invited us into something richer and more meaningful, and as Josh mentioned a moment ago, restful. We'll talk a little bit in the series about how Jesus' yoke is a yoke of rest. Well, here's the thing about us. It's not just other religious leaders that offer a different kind of yoke for us, a different kind of way of imagining the world and our place within it. In fact, everywhere we go is offering us a particular yoke, a particular way of thinking about the world and our place in it. There's a book that James K. Smith wrote called Desiring the Kingdom. I'm going to put it on the screen later in case some of you want to read it. It's not the easiest read, you know, but it's phenomenal. Ken, you've read it, right? Oh, so good. Anyway, in that book, Smith talks about how it's not just religious context, it's our entire world that is inviting us into a broken yoke. And we are victims to it and participants within it, often without even realizing it. And so in one section of his book, I'm going to read a little bit of it for you, he describes a particular way that we experience this in the world. And it's a little dated because it's an experience of going to the mall. A little bit dated, right? Teenagers, I don't think, go to the mall to hang out anymore, do you? To people watch? Yeah. Well, anyway, I want to read a little bit of this to you, and I want you to remember he's talking about the mall, but he's really talking about many experiences that we have in the world, all right? So speaking of the mall as a religious experience that's inviting us to take on a particular yoke, okay? He writes, these are just snippets from it. One might say that this religious building, speaking of the mall, has a winding labyrinth for contemplation, alongside of which are innumerable chapels devoted to the various saints. He's talking about the stores, right? As we wander the labyrinth in contemplation, preparing to enter one of the chapels, we'll be struck by the rich iconography that lines the walls and interior spaces. These icons embody for us concrete images of the good life. These pictures of beautiful people. And we try on the clothes that those beautiful people are wearing, and we imagine that in some way we look like that, and we don't, you know? He writes, this temple, like countless others now emerging around the world, now being closed around the world because of online shopping, offers a rich embodied visual mode of evangelism that attracts us. This is a gospel whose power is beauty, which speaks to our deepest desires and compels us to come with a winsome invitation to share in the envisioned good life. This is a car lot, isn't it? It's a mall. It's a camping store. It's a social media. It's the bank. It's all of the paths that human beings could take, an invitation to a particular yoke that we weren't meant to carry. As we pause to reflect on some of the icons on the outside of one of the chapels, we are thereby invited to consider what's happening within the chapel, invited to enter into the act of worship more properly, invited to taste and see. Worship meaning a longing to be a part of it, a longing to have it and to look like it and be like it. We're greeted by a welcoming acolyte. Call the salesperson an acolyte this week if you go into a store, who offers to shepherd us through the experience, but also has the wisdom to allow us to explore on our own terms. Having a sense of our need, we come looking, not sure what for, but expectant, knowing that what we need must be here. Walmart has everything that you need. After time spent focusing and searching in what the faithful call the racks, with our newfound holy object in hand, we proceed to the altar, which is the consummation of worship. This is a religion of transaction and exchange and communion. When invited to worship here, we are not only invited to give, we are also invited to take. We don't leave this transformative experience with just good feelings or pious generalities, but rather with something concrete and tangible, with newly minted relics, as it were, that are themselves the means to the good life, embodied in the icons who invited us into this participatory moment in the first place. Are you with me, church? You feel it? The temple. One more. And so we make our sacrifice, leaving our donation, but in return receive something with solidity that is wrapped in the colors and symbols of the saints and the season. Released by the priest with a benediction, come back soon, we make our way out of the chapel to continue contemplation and be invited into another chapel. Who could resist the tangible realities of the good life so abundantly and invitingly offered? That's pretty good, isn't it? We experience this at the sports arena. We experience it as we scroll and scroll and scroll and are invited in to a more perfect life, a more full life, a more popular life. And each one of us is sure that we can navigate the temple and the labyrinth without really being sucked in, right? We think that we alone have the capacity to engage with the priests and the acolytes and the invitation into a certain kind of life and not really be sucked into it. And this is our difficulty, because we believe that we can sink two yokes that don't belong together. We believe that we can say yes to Jesus' invitation to a particular way of life and flirt with the other temples. We see in our young people their inability to do so, don't we? We see them scrolling, and we know they are being shaped by the temples in which they worship, and we grieve for them, and we look for ways to rescue them from the temple of social media and think that we can do better, that we can sink the two or the three or the many together. You hear me? You know what I'm saying? This is the difference between truth and lie. Which yoke is the truth? And which ones are full of lies that end up not giving us joy, but robbing us of it? The picture that they paint for us of the flourishing life is simply untrue. It's a lie. It's a lie that not just the young people believe, but we're all susceptible to it. I drive by the temple of Jeep Wranglers on Duluth Highway. Oh, man. I feel certain if God would give me the money, I could go in there and get something and not worship. I've been telling him that. He is not abiding with that invitation. All right, well, we're going to spend the series talking about truth and lie, and the purpose of the series is absolutely not to shame us. The purpose of the series is not to guilt us over the lies that we sometimes get sucked into. the purpose of this series is clarity, an invitation to keep doing what we've been trying to do, and that is to shift our gaze and attention, and most importantly, our longing toward Jesus, and receive the yoke that he chooses to give to us, and therefore be surprised by rest, to be surprised by joy and peace. Here's that passage that Josh mentioned a moment ago. It's in Matthew 11. It's our guiding text for this series. Come to me, Jesus says, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens. You're carrying heavy burdens because you have been the victims and the participants in yokes that aren't a part of the kingdom of God. And these yokes just bury us. At the weightiest part of the yokes in our world is attached to money. We get so buried under it, with stress about it, with intention to do more with it. It's not the only one, but it's certainly there. We get buried down by the yoke of political rightness, being the one who is right and making sure the ones who are wrong know that they're wrong. And it's a heavy burden for us. We get so buried down, some of us, by social media and the images of what the good life looked like. And Jesus, in this context of both secular and religious burdens being placed on human beings that were never meant to be there, says, listen, listen, church, try it out for a month. Give me a shot. Because being with me is not just about believing the right things. It is a practice, a way of doing life together. Come to me, all who are weary and heavily burdened, and I will surprise you with rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Because guess what? My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Well, I'm speaking to the choir, right? Like, this is what we believe. It's what we want to believe. We have this mission statement at campus that, will you put it on the board there, Russell, I think? That our mission is to help others experience the good life in Jesus together every day. That is our mission. And when we first started saying that, I had so many people like push back and say, life isn't always good. And my response is, you're right. That's why it's our mission. Life isn't always good because there's so many yokes out there that are hurting and burdening people. And we believe that life in Jesus is the good life. We believe it and we want to believe it. We want to pour our whole self into the yoke that comes from Jesus, believing that in truth, in light, in the Jesus way is rest and peace. And in lies, in the darkness, in all of the invitations that bombard us day by day is weariness and sorrow and loneliness. Here's the thing about Jesus. Jesus is willing to give his life for you to find life. Here's the thing about yokes. Yokes that aren't from Jesus want to weigh you down. Here's the thing about us. We are so drawn to other rabbis, aren't we? It's just part of our struggle. It's part of being human. It's part of what sin is in our lives. We're so often drawn to other rabbis. I want to spend a lot of Sundays just inviting you back to the rabbi, reminding you who your rabbi is, and reminding you of the truth of the yoke that he wants to give you, church. Okay? All right, so I have a couple of assignments for you, and then Julie's going to come up. Come on up, Julie, while I'm saying this. Okay, I want to ask you to do a couple things. One, I want to ask you to commit to reading the Sermon on the Mount once a week. Just take some time and receive the Sermon on the Mount as Jesus Jesus' liberation for those who are burdened under yokes that don't belong in their life. Read it every week if you can, okay, church? And then I want to give you two book recommendations. One is, one is Live No Lies by Mark Comer. Very easy read, good stuff. Most of it's good stuff. A lot of it's good stuff. Grab that book if you want to and read it. I'll have Lauren post this on social media later. The other book, a really hard read. If you're one of those that likes to read really hard reads, it's so good, called Desiring the Kingdom, James K. Smith. He just talks about what it looks like to embody the way and be transformed by it. Okay, church, come on up, Julie.